Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Welcome to All About Android, episode 87, recorded on Tuesday, November 27th, 2012. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Ron Richards, and you've graduated up to the big chair.
I guess so.
I'm impressed.
I just sat down.
Yeah, there you go. Nice.
Which is nice and comfy, but I don't get the big throne. And I'm still Father Robert Balasair, or Father Not Eileen. Oh, that just that hurts.
Does.
Oh, we miss Eileen terribly. Although
I've gotten over it already.
She's just that girl that lives in L.A.
Whatever. Somebody I used to know. We used to hang out.
If you've been following her Twitter feed, you've seen a little bit of kind of the stuff that she's doing now. Yeah. It's so exciting.
Little Miss
so
cool. Google, whatever.
I know, but that studio looks so cool.
It looks really
There's
cool.
an L.A. Times article about the studio that she's working in. Yeah. You have to check it out. Search it out and find it. I think it was posted in the last few days. It's really cool. She's working in a very cool facility.
Very lucky. But it's good to be back. I'm sorry I missed last week.
That's okay.
Thanksgiving
Forgive you.
Travel got in the way.
I understand.
And sort of thing,
Turkey. So. Turkey has that effect on people.
It does. Well, it was pre-Turkey, but still. It was the anticipation of Turkey.
It was the excitement of Turkey ahead of the actual event.
Yeah.
It shrouds your judgment. So, no, it's all good. Totally understand. This week, we're going to be discussing, among other things, the Nexus 4, how it was on sale today and was kind of an interesting ordeal for many. The Android engagement paradox, which sounds kind of, a little more wacky than it actually is, but it's good discussion. December is remembered once again, and so much more. But let's dive right into the news.
So, as mentioned, the hotly anticipated Nexus 4, and I gotta admit, as I'm prepping for the show and reading our news and going over stuff, I can't help but think about the previous Nexus phones and back when I stood in the line of six people at Best Buy to buy a Nexus S, and we're making, me and Zach from Revision 3 were making jokes about how there was no line, and yet now Nexus 4, people are having a hard time buying it due to the overwhelming demand and flooding the servers and basically shutting down the Google Play Store.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Crazy indeed. So basically, the Nexus 4 went back on sale, but then traffic was so large that it made people unable to actually complete their purchase. So you can get to the site, but actually going through the payment purchase process was halted due to the overwhelming traffic to the websites. They had told everyone that it was going to be live at noon Pacific, and then within a minute, it appeared to be out of stock. Which is just crazy. And then as people who did see it in stock, they got this error message that the folks watching the video can see on screen. Due to high demand, your order could not be processed. Please try again later. Google was saying that the device is not sold out, that it was a problem with the website and the overwhelming traffic, and that Nexus 4 people who want to buy it should try coming back later because they'll sort out these problems. Really got to wonder when Google has site capacity problems.
That's the strange thing here. I totally agree.
Thousands of miles of dark fiber and servers hidden in bunkers in Omaha and things like that. You wouldn't think that this would happen.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just a sign, because I guess this is a little bit different. Well, no, it's not. Capacity is capacity.
Yep.
But this is, them taking the sales of devices and that whole process, something that I don't really understand myself.
Well,
but they're taking that, and it's kind of new to them. So I have to imagine that's part of this.
E-commerce, but what I find fascinating is that it's 2012. Like, I can understand this problem. Executing a successful e-commerce site, what you've got to do is you've got to have a secure connection, you've got to gather the customer data, you've got to do the credit card processing, you've got to check with inventory to make sure it's in stock. When someone starts the payment process, you need to say, okay, one of those that is in stock is this person's until it completes or they abandon.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's very, very complicated. But if this is 1999 or 2001, 2002, I could understand. But kind of figure this out,
Yeah, and not to mention, it's Google, one of the largest companies. You would think that if they really truly saw this as a weakness on their side, that they would, you know, have some minds that they could bring in. And I'm sure that's they've done that, but it hasn't been very effective. Yeah.
But Google's doing something that a lot of other online vendors aren't doing, and that is they're tying into a lot of different modules. So they've got their verification module that hands out those certificates. They've got the credit card processor.
Which is Google Wallet.
Which is Google Wallet. They've got the integration into your Google account. So every time you hit a Google server, it's looking back at all of your activity. And so this might actually be a case of they've got a really good infrastructure, but because their system is so interconnected, it choked itself.
Well, which is shock. I mean, I've never heard of a large sequence of large systems having a hard time playing together. Like, that is something that is commonly is a big problem. And so it's clear that when we often joke about Google with the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing, in this case, the left hand can't use the right hand effectively to, you know, to execute on the what they want in their vision of use Google Wallet for payment processing, use Google Plus accounts for account management stuff. It's kind of a little fascinating.
I mean, the big problem, I think, for Google, at least right now in the month, less than a month, leading up to Christmas, is the fact that because this is the second time that this device has gone on sale and experienced the same kind of issues the second time, although I am seeing a lot more people today as the day progresses go, okay, yay, I finally got it.
Yeah,
excellent.
Well, I'm sure they've got
that's
all hands
good.
It's funny, I can get it right now.
Chad just bought one.
Like, I just pretty much bought one.
Buy another one.
Excellent. So, you know, maybe as the days
Chad
progress, they've kind of
Nexus
figured this out.
Thanks,
Chad.
If you could buy me one, that'd be
Nexus
4. You want one? Okay.
Thanks.
You get a phone, and you get a phone, and you get a phone.
Wow, I was wondering if I was going to get this phone. Thank you, Chad.
That's what super producers do.
Yeah, you're awesome. We're so happy to have you on this.
Chad is making
show.
It rain Android.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, it's a critical time right now, and they knew that. You know, the holiday season is important to all manufacturers of devices, so it's not like they didn't know that this is a critical time. Yep. But this is the second time that the experience has been painful for a lot of people, and actually the true fans of the platform are experiencing pain. A lot of them have just decided, you know what, screw it. This sucks. I don't want to sit here trying to do this over and over and beating my head against the wall. Yeah. I'm just going to get the S3 or whatever.
Well,
decide.
I mean, that's what happened. That's customer service. I mean, every time you make it hard for someone to complete a purchase, they run the risk of going to buy something else.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's definitely something. I don't know whether the natural reaction is like, well, I can't buy this, I'm going to go buy something else right now, or I'll try back later.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think is fascinating about this is just the change in direction in terms of the demand. Is that you know, they've been running, I don't know if you noticed, but they've been running hella banner ads across the web. I mean, I'm seeing Nexus, and maybe because I'm targeted for it, so I see it more.
Right.
But you're seeing it. I'm seeing it in magazines, like every issue of Entertainment Weekly since the Nexus 10 came out has had an ad for it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really making the full court press on the consumer side, and clearly the interest is there. You know, so I mean, I don't know whether it's all people like us or people who actually want the phone. You know, like the normals.
My favorite part about that story is last week when I was prepping for This Week in Enterprise Tech, I was looking up all the Microsoft stories, specifically looking at Windows 8 and Windows Mobile, and every single story had a Nexus banner on it.
Yeah.
So I mean, they're making a full court press, which again, that sort of makes you ask, if you're going to advertise and you're going to try to drum up this enthusiasm, then why would you not make sure that your back-end servers are up to the task?
Yep. Yeah. And the thing is, it's not even like we don't have the technology to test this. There are load testing and scripts and things like that you can run to, like, okay, we're going to dial it up to, 10,000 people, 20,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And you can test this. I wonder how much of this was them just rushing to the finish line. And I wonder how chaotic it was down in Mountain View, you know, trying to fix this. Like, why is this a problem?
Cordy Anonymous makes a really good point, and this is actually what I was trying to get to earlier, and that is the Google doesn't operate like a particular online vendor. They have separated out their different entities, from the Plus, from the Wallet, because it's more secure.
Yeah.
But as a result, it means it makes it much more – there's much more overhead for them to actually process something as simple as a payment.
Right.
So, you know – on one hand, it's kind of a bummer that this happened, but it also means my data is more secure. If one of these systems gets hacked, it's not going to expose all of my information.
Yeah.
So I'd wait a little longer for a phone.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but now, of course, no problem on the internet is not unsolvable by the geeks. And sure enough, as this problem was happening, a workaround around some of the problems folks were having in the checkout process was revealed. This is interesting in that the proceed button in the payment flow which typically, you know, there's a lot of UI suggestions, and graying out a button makes you realize that the button isn't clickable. Like, oh, you can't click that.
Right.
In reality, that proceed button was just grayed out visually, and yet it could still be clicked. And so folks figured out that if you just brute force, just keep clicking on it, eventually it will go through, and eventually you'll be able to. And people even wrote scripts that let you just, you know, kind of tab
you could tab over to it and just hold down return.
And so if you were tenacious enough, you'd be able to get through some of the problems through brute force and be able to do that. I'm sure they're going to fix that at some point, because that is just sloppy coding on their end. But interesting to see how the geeks figured it out.
So somebody in the comments on this article actually puts Google, the only company where nerds write scripts to check out properly by automating a button press. That's Roberto Gianta.
That actually happened at Google I.O. You know how it sells out so quickly? Yep. Some people figured out that the header for the confirmation page only changed date. And if you were logged into your Google account, you could go straight to the confirmation page and hit buy.
Oh, nice.
And so, yeah, you just change it from 2011 to 2012, somewhere in that string, and boom, you went. So there is, I kind of like that. That's part of that geek culture of
everything's hackable.
If you figure it out, if you're smart enough, you'll get an advantage.
Now, wait a minute. Okay, but let's back up here. So when you hit proceed, you're sending something to their servers, right?
Correct.
Yep.
Could this be the problem? I mean, seriously, if everybody's getting there.
It could be related to it, yeah.
They're like, wait a minute, I can't get through because the server's getting hit. But no, actually, that's you.
It's you, yeah.
Who knows?
Stop refreshing.
I just hope, ultimately, obviously, we all hope that Google kind of figures this out, because it would be great for folks that want to propel their you know, cool initiatives like this into the next level, to be able to do so without pain and torment, because that stuff leaves a scar. It's hard to forget that stuff
the
next time
around.
But
it's a happy scar.
What's that?
It's a happy scar.
Yeah, it's a scar on jelly bean.
There you go.
And maybe that's worth it. I don't know. There was, let's see here, in the wake of Black Friday, of course, Black Friday happened last Friday. And then, you know, Cyber Monday actually was yesterday. Supposedly it did like really awesome or something.
It was
breaking,
everyone's
breaking records. But yeah. IBM released a Black Friday report detailing, among other things, the ways that deals were shopped online, and some interesting takeaway points from this that I think we could talk about a little bit. 24% of online sales were from mobile devices.
So people buying from their phones.
From their mobile device, phone, tablet, whatever. 13% of that came from phones. Of that 13%, iOS represents 67%, Android the remaining 33%. The remaining 11% came from tablets.
Interesting.
An iPad represents 88% of that, with Android at 12%. Now, obviously, in this case, iOS dominates these figures. But ComScore data shows from November 12th that there are 60-plus million Android users to iOS's 40-plus million million users. So, obviously, much more on the Android side. But the ratio for how engaged iOS users are with shopping on their phones versus Android users has actually widened over the 2 years. 2 years ago, iOS ruled Android 2-1, and now it's 3-1. So why is iOS so much stronger in things like browsing and shopping when you take a look at kind of these statistics together?
Well, that's really interesting, because I'm curious.
What is Android not doing?
Yeah, I mean, so are Android users also mainly on computers?
Right. Mean, like, is it a user, or is it a user's is thing, it a, is it a, or is it, a, is it an demogra- experience
is it,
thing?
Is it a demographic thing where Android users are more typically ones to also be on computers, where iOS users might not be on computers as much? I don't know. I'm shooting from the hip. Also, do they specify, is it purchasing via web-based, browser-based e-commerce points, or purchasing via apps?
I think it's both. I think it's just mobile purchases.
My guess would be is that I would imagine there's probably more retail apps available on the iOS platform than there are on the Android platform, because everybody's like, oh, I got to have an iPhone app. You know, so like, does J.Crew have an iPhone app? And do they have an Android app? You know, like, I don't know if you shop at J.Crew.
The problem is that these are really empty statistics.
Yeah.
Because there's so many different answers you can throw at this that are just glib. You could say, oh, well, people who own iOS devices, they have more money, and so therefore they'd be shopping more often. Or you might say, well, people who own Android devices, they're cheap, and so if they're cheap, they're not shopping at all. But what it really comes down to is this is a specific subset of numbers that shows that we've got more traffic from iOS devices, but not necessarily that iOS users buy more stuff than Android users.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, because we're, you gotta parse it carefully.
This doesn't take into account any sort of discount.
So I'm assuming that there's some sort of conversion that's happening, like the purchase is happening.
Right.
Well, here, let's informal poll. We're all Android users. Do you shop on your phone?
Yes, I do.
I do not.
Very little.
Yep. I actively do not. I will go to the computer to shop for some reason.
I shop on the phone. I wouldn't say that's the only place that I shop.
No,
but I have a few apps that I check.
I won't shop on the phone.
That if something comes up, I'll do it there. I will say it's never quite as easy or as painless as I would hope that it would be. Mm. And if I'm given the option or I have the time, you know, the time flexibility, I'll wait until later to do it on the desktop. Right. Sure.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's different. I wonder if on iOS it's less of a pain point.
Are those users used to it? Are they more trained? Are they, because they've got a couple of years ahead of us, are they more comfortable with it? I don't know.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the other side of this, like another possible, you know, there's, like you said, there's a million different things you could throw at this, and none of them would be 100% right. But I think they all kind of create a bigger kind of interesting picture. You know, Android tends to be, some people would say, a little bit of like a gateway into smartphone versus, you know, from somebody who was just on a flip phone. Like my dad, take my dad, for example, he's been on flip phone forever. And what is the Android device that he bought? It was a Samsung Galaxy S3. Of course,
that.
He returned it 2 weeks later because it was too complicated for him. And he ended up getting a flip phone again. But I guarantee you, if my dad had stuck with it, he probably wouldn't be using it as a smartphone. Nope. He'd be making calls and maybe sending an occasional text message. He wouldn't be using it the same way that we do.
I've got the exact same thing with my dad. He still has a Motorola Razr, the original flip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, he looked at the Nexus 4. He said, okay, that's the phone I want to get. But as we're talking, he's saying, but I don't want data. And I'm trying to explain to him, well, it's a smartphone.
That's kind of the thing.
You need data. And he's like, no, I'm not going to use it.
Right. Yeah.
But, I mean, I think that's actually not uncommon, where you have a lot of people who you can only buy smartphones now. If you want a flip phone, it's actually more expensive than to buy a smartphone. Yep.
I had this discussion with my mother today, and she went, you know, the phone that I have right now is that HTC Android. And I went, okay, I know the phone you have because I bought it with you. It's the Incredible 2. And then I was like, well, you should probably get the Galaxy S3, the Droid Razr Max HD, you know, like there's all these other things. She's like, well, yeah, but what about this, the Droid M? It's only $50. And it was just like, you are a different user. I am talking to a different user than myself.
And would probably be great for your mom.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and IBM's actually not a bad phone.
It's a great phone. Yeah. But yeah, absolutely. It's definitely an eye-opener.
You know what I'm fascinated by is, as we're talking about the regular users of the world and stuff like that, how many of them, like, she has the HTC Android.
Right.
Like, do they understand that Android is the operating system that Samsung, HTC, all these, Motorola, all these have, or do they think that they're each their own unique thing?
The thing is, I don't know what all users. My mother is smart enough to, when I'm like, Android's the operating system, she's like, oh okay. Yeah. It's just, that's something that's not in her head. Like, she knows what an operating system is. She knows that Samsung is a manufacturer of that device, and she knows that it's on Verizon, which is the carrier of all of it, right? But that's just not information that she cares about. So, me saying you have, you know, and then even when I'm like, you have the Incredible 2, she's like, I get it. That's the name of the device that I'm using.
Right.
These are the other names. You know, I'm going to write down the names of these other devices. She gets it. She just doesn't care.
Right.
No, yeah. That's a really good point. Did she know, you know, what the name of the operating system was on the flip phone that she had before?
She may have known Symbian.
You could ask her. She'd be like, it's running Symbian.
The thing is she probably wouldn't have told me that. But if I told her you're running Symbian, she would have been like, "Cool, I'll remember that for 5 seconds, and then
okay, yeah." I mean, it wouldn't matter. That wouldn't matter in the grand scheme of why she owns that device. She owns it because it makes calls and receives text messages from you.
Exactly.
Doesn't send me. I don't know your mom actually, so I don't know this. But this is the case in my family.
Right.
I send text messages to them. I rarely ever, if ever, get any back. They don't use their devices like that. So you know. Anyways, interesting kind of questions brought about by this. And there, like you said, there's no way to really pinpoint anything on this or really make any grand conclusions on it either, because you just don't have the full picture. You rarely ever do. All right. 4.2.1.
Oh, no.
bad.
Oh, it's okay.
Well, it's inevitable, right?
Okay, so we've got 4.2.1. Have any of you had issues with your upgrade to 4.2?
I don't have it yet.
I seem to have resolved my issues before the show started.
So we're looking at Android 4.2.1 coming out because there have been reports, spotty reports, of just very strange issues happening across different phones. Like, for example, we all have a Nexus. We all have a Galaxy Nexus.
Yep.
I had a major problem with my phone where after I did the update, I went from a full day, maybe a day and a half of battery life, to 17 minutes from 100% to 0%.
Wow.
And there was some sort of exchange bug. I have exchange set up on my phone, and it would always be pushing the server.
Yeah.
You had an issue with, what was it, some applications wouldn't update.
Well, yeah, I had an issue with my, basically with my account, where I was getting, well, a lot of people might, I think a lot of people experienced the login issue over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend.
Yeah, I did. But I'm not on 4.2. So.
But then after that, my apps just weren't updating. Like, I was getting an error on updating, so I had to actually remove my Google account and re-add it to the phone, and now they appear to be updating. It all happened live while we were on before the show. So,
right.
Yeah.
And I was looking at, I mean, the 4.2 update actually is quite good. I love the fact that I've added swipe back in. That's one of the things I miss the most about moving from the S2. Getting back to predictive texting, that's a big thing for me.
And honestly, I think it works a little better than swipe did. Now, I haven't had swipe.
I've actually used it a lot.
I had swipe on my Galaxy Nexus S, and I didn't install it on here because I wanted to keep the stock for some reason, and I think I was just too lazy to, because the install on swipe was annoying. You had to go to the website, you had to log in, you had to whatever. But from my memory of how swipe worked about a year ago, I think this is superior. I think it's really, I think it's really nice. I think the prediction is really good. The word prediction after you're swiping is right there at the end of the word as opposed to somewhere else. Like, I think
that actually comes in really handy.
Really
seeing
handy.
It right above where your finger is at that moment.
So I'm loving it. I think 4.2 is great. So I haven't experienced the battery issue though. And at the day I got the update, I saw people tweeting and talking about, oh, I hope you don't have this battery issue that I'm having. And I was just like, oh, I hope I don't either.
I also do like the fact that finally I can swap my actual home screen onto the side view.
Yep.
Now, one of the things about the 4.2 update has been that, well, with these strange, inexplicable issues that certain people have been having, certain users have been experiencing, the 4.2.1 update supposedly should get rid of those. But here's the problem. By the time the 4.2.1 update comes out, most of the people who had issues with 4.2 are going to have figured out the workarounds. Like, you had to reset your phone.
Yep.
I had to delete my exchange account and bring them back in. So I'm not really exactly sure what they're doing other than maybe making that happen in the background without you having to interact.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's going to fix those, though, for anybody who is late to getting that update. Like, I don't even have 4.2 at all. So probably the first one I'm going to get is going to be 4.2.1, which fixes all those problems, and then I don't even have to experience
them. So what you're saying is we were your beta test.
Yeah. Right. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome. I'm fine with that.
I appreciate that. You know, one thing that I'm going to get when I get it on my phone, December, because December's back.
Yeah.
Thank God December's back. Yeah.
Yes.
That someone at Google's got to just, like, I've been in meetings where, like, there's something stupid like that happens.
Oh, yeah.
And you're just like, oh, come on. Like, we didn't
really
need this. Yeah,
why'd this happen? Yeah, yeah, totally. And thankfully, they got to it before December actually happened. So good on you, Google. I was wondering if that was going to happen, and you guys pulled it off with a few days.
Is anyone going to leave their phone on 4.2 just to find out what happens when you do get to December?
I'm sure someone's going to turn into
a brick of gold, I heard.
Yeah, just freak out.
You could sell it and buy a bunch of Nexus 4s.
Maybe that's what's going to cause the end of the world.
Well, don't do it. We don't need anyone doing that.
Google has foreknowledge. December 21st, that date has to be eliminated so we can continue on with the calendar. Now I understand. See, Google was saving our lives. We didn't even know it.
They're that good.
Thank you, Google.
They're maybe not so good at the online sales thing.
No.
But they're really good at saving people's lives.
When these start to pile up, does it make you wonder what's going on? I mean, first you've got the debacle with not being able to sell the phones that you're pimping out, and then you remove December from the calendar.
I don't know. I haven't looked into that much. I kind of dismissed it because I saw the Android haters making fun of it. Stuff like that. But I swear to God, I would not be surprised if that was just something as simple as like an unclosed quote or somewhere in the code, just a dumb mistake that slipped through QA and reminds you that there are humans behind all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's all it takes. I mean, the limited amount of coding I've done, I can't tell you how many times and how many hours I spent and banged my head on a table. I'm like, oh, I just have to close that bracket. And then if it, and then it's fixed. So I bet you December was commented out or something like that.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, it wasn't absent from the entire OS. Yeah. It was in the People app. It was a very specific thing. Yeah. Like you're adding a person, you're setting their birth date to December, and it won't let you do it. Yeah. So it wasn't like this grand thing that I don't know how testing goes. I mean, maybe it's that detailed. It should be, I guess.
Well, it should be. You're supposed to have tests, you know, for every application. Like,
but it wouldn't be the kind of thing where you open up the calendar, you know, the calendar app, and you swipe, and there's no December there, you know. And so it'd be like, oh, well, duh, there's no December there, or we missed that. I mean, I think you're right. To a certain degree, Google, as much as I hate kind of admitting it sometimes, has a problem with kind of coming. Well, they come up, they have great ideas, and they have these great initiatives and everything. But sometimes the execution just isn't quite there. And if they just kind of hashed it out a little bit more before it got there, it would go a long way to cementing them as maybe having a little bit more of that thought.
You see, but that's the aspect that I like about it. It's kind of like an underdog. It's kind of scrappy. it's rough around the edges, you know.
Yeah.
and that works great for geeks. But yeah, I mean, Google's trying to shed its beta image. I mean, that used to be the inside joke. Everything at Google is in beta except for search.
Sure.
Well, Android's no longer in beta. Android is a bona fide hit. It's a major platform. And you can't do things like this. Yeah. I mean, Apple Maps is one thing. That was an application integrated in the operating system that just wasn't designed very well. This was actually the OS. This was how the OS handled an app. That's never supposed to be suspect.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it does make me wonder if they've gotten rid of that beta culture where, oh, we'll fix it when people complain.
Yeah,
we'll fix it in post.
Yeah.
By the way, that's never a good idea. Don't ever live your life in fixing it in post. That can get you into a lot of trouble. It's kind of the same thing here. All right, let's jump right into hardware.
So now that Eileen has moved on from the show, we can lift our bias against Canada and report on Android-related Canadian news.
Thank you.
I know, right?
Because somebody had to say it.
I mean, it got really tense in those meetings when she's just like, oh, Canada? No, that's not in the rundown. No, I'm just kidding. Eileen loves Canada.
There's a lot to say about Canada.
I'm sorry.
But those
Canadian Android enthusiasts should be pretty excited at this news, that news coming out of the Nexus 4 that LTE is there in the Nexus 4 for use in Canada if you're on Rogers, Telus, or Bell. There are some tweaks that have to be made. There's a video that's posted that kind of walks you through some of the different settings that you need to do. But you can adjust your phone and unlock LTE in Canada on the Nexus 4.
It's not without a few pain points.
True.
definitely has a few pain points. So this, basically, what this stems back to is sometime last week, people started to realize that there was this dormant LTE chip in the underlying kind of hardware inside the Nexus 4. And so suddenly people are like, well, maybe we can just hack our phone and turn LTE on and magically it'll work with all the LTE. And then a lot of people are saying, no, you can't do that. And then, of course, it came out that you actually can in Canada. But it's obviously something that wasn't, you know, it was never intended to be lit up within the device.
Well, just to give a sense, it's just six quick steps, and we'll just walk through them real quickly.
if you go into
the settings, more than mobile networks and access point names, you can enter in the access point name for either Rogers, Telus, or Bell. And if you're using Telus or Bell, you can use the same access point name that was in when you put your SIM card in. So once you do that, then you go to your phone, and in the dialer you enter *#**#*4636#**#.
Got that.
And then you tap on phone information and then set preferred network type, and then you could choose LTE.
I've been typing that into every Android phone I own. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, it's good it's to weird. See that this trick finally works.
Yeah, finally.
You know? Up, down, left, right.
Totally. Well, okay, so once you do this, the phone actually reverts back to WCDMA preferred when you reboot. So you have to remember to make the switch again. You don't have to go through this whole process, I don't think, or do you?
If you do,
that's uber lame.
Yep.
And then apparently Google Now doesn't work when you're connected to LTE. This is by no means a solution that most people are going to be like, isn't it interesting? We actually got it to work type thing.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to do this daily and be cool with it. Most people are not.
This is a carrier's nightmare, because when you start using bands for protocols that weren't designed for that, when you start activating parts of the phone that are dormant for a reason, maybe they don't have the cut filters to prevent them from interfering with other frequencies, that's when, you know, you can destroy a carrier's real estate, their entire spectrum, with a couple of thousand phones that are using this little hack.
And that's a interesting point, because the next story I want to talk about is one that I'm going to freely admit is now getting to the periphery of my knowledge and ability to comprehend. But the Nexus 4 also, it was revealed, includes support for LTE on band 4, AWS. And there's a great post on Anantech. I can never pronounce that. Anantech. About how you can switch over what band it's broadcasting on. Apparently, it defaults to the broadcast band 1 or 2, but band 4 is at a higher is at a different megahertz, you know, spectrum type thing, and you're able to change it. But again, very technical. Is it intended on the carrier? Is the carrier forcing it to bands for a reason? You know, like, and once you start kind of hacking with this stuff, you put into question whether the phone is operating as it's meant to be. Mm-hmm. You know, because the carriers go through a lot of work to make sure the capacity is there and the phones all can work. And, you know, so, and this one, I was reading this one and my head started to hurt. But
yeah, it'd be interesting. I'm sure at some point there will be an OTA rolled out that'll just like disable it completely, except for, you know, anybody hacking their phone, you know, with a ROM of some sort. Then the ROMers will probably find their way
around.
That's
the thing. The hackers will always be there. I mean, it goes back, you know, like, you know, overclocking computers and unlocking, you know, parts of the operating system that weren't meant to be and stuff like that. It's always going to happen. It's just whether or not.
That's kind of fun. I like stories like this, though, because, yes, the hackers are always going to be there, and definitely Android kind of courts the hackers. Yeah. We want the hacker crowd. We want the geek crowd. But the question is, now that we've kind of grown up and we've got an operating system that is fantastic and that works for hackers and for regular consumers alike, can we be responsible enough to hack our devices but not do things that are going to disrupt the game for everybody else?
Right? Yeah. Good point.
That's what it comes down to, ultimately.
Good point.
Yeah. I mean, I could turn my phone into a jammer if I wanted to.
Yeah.
But I probably shouldn't.
What, you mean like play like really loud rock music?
Well, no. I mean, what I used to do is I created a device when I was giving homilies in Hawaii, very small parish, that would, when activated, knock people off their cell phone.
Awesome.
So I wouldn't get ringing. But it looked like they had full bars.
Yeah.
But they just would not get any data or any calls.
Awesome.
That's a hack, and it was fun, but you really shouldn't do that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you really, really shouldn't.
Well, I mean, I could see movie theaters. I could see. Did you use it in the movie theater?
No, I've never used it in public.
You see, all right, there you go. See, I was going to say, oh, look, the priest is such a better person than me, but I see the shifty eyes.
Have you ever been on a BART train with someone who's having an obnoxiously loud conversation on a phone? Mm. I will admit, maybe once it accidentally turned on.
Oops.
That's awesome. Awesome.
That is pretty awesome. Do you happen to have an awesome device with you right now?
I do. I have this. This is a Galaxy Note 2.
Ooh.
This is the LTE edition. So the international edition has been available for some time. This we reviewed on Before You Buy today. Mm-hmm. And what we found was this is just every bit the phone that the Galaxy Note 2 International was. It's fast. Have you played with this thing?
The phablet? No,
yeah,
I haven't.
It's. I mean, it is large. It's 5.5 inches. It's slightly lower resolution than the Note 1. So the Note 1 was 1280 by 800. This is 1280 by 720. But it uses an HD Super AMOLED screen instead of that Pentile screen, so it doesn't feel blue. I mean, if you look, the colors are really warm. It's really vibrant.
Yep.
The motion is smooth. And one of my favorite features about this is, you know how if you're looking at your phone in bed and you get that annoying, it keeps rotating because you're on side.
Yeah, yeah.
This actually does face detection. It knows which way your face
is. That's the Samsung stuff, right?
Right. Yeah, so if you're lying in your bed, it'll actually keep oriented so you can continue to read even when you're lying down. I also found that the extra screen real estate allows for multi-windowed applications, unlike any phone that you're going to find. Here's the issue I've had with that, and that is it's operating on Sprint's LTE service because it is an LTE phone, and Sprint's LTE service is absolutely horrid. It's ridiculously bad, and it's not just that it's bad. It's that there are spots of LTE, and right now LTE devices don't have a really good way to hand up and down. So if you are on a call on an LTE service and you go into an area that's switching you back down to CDMA, it will drop the call. And the same thing with the data stream. Versus this, my Nexus, which is on an HSPA Plus service, that will actually make the transition back and forth, back and forth. Now, the reason why we're bringing this up is because, well, Samsung announced that they sold almost, is it double what they sold the first day of the Samsung Note 2 sales. They're up to almost 6 million right now. Now, that's not much compared to the 20 million that we've got of the Galaxy S3 over 100 days. But for a phone that just a while ago in this program, it was sort of a game to find one of these in the wild.
Yep.
That's amazing. I mean, people are finally realizing that this is not a joke. I mean, it does feel nice, and it does offer functionality you can't get on another phone.
And I'm fascinated by the amount of marketing that Samsung's putting at it. I mean, I know we've been talking a lot about Samsung's aggressive marketing and the Galaxy S3 and stuff like that, but you know, walking around San Francisco, getting on Muni and getting on BART, there are big old Note 2 ads. And in New York City, there are buses, signs on buses about the Galaxy Note 2 and the next big thing and all that sort of, you know, they're pushing it. And I guess it's working. So.
And this is the only con I could think of. Once you start using this phone, and I have to send this back, this was a review unit, so this is gone now. I used to think the screen was big. Yep. And now I'm looking at the screen, I'm going, wah, wah.
The screen size gap is widening.
Envy, right,
yeah,
right.
No, I mean, it's the same for, you know, if I go from this and then go back to my original Motorola Droid.
Can't do it.
It's like, how did I last? How did I last that long on such a small screen? Like you don't know what you know.
Yeah, when I found my Nexus S, like we talked about this before, I was pulling pictures off my Nexus S, and it's tiny in my hand compared to this. And I remember that was huge when that came out. I'm like, oh, this phone's enormous.
You can never go back. And, you know, things like this, like, you know, this is something that Samsung does. It's got these removable back covers.
Right.
So the standard one is just a back cover. But you can also buy these little accessory kits that have the back cover plus a front cover.
Yeah.
So you can, in essence, put this into a case without having the added weight or size.
Yeah, like I'm a not case. I don't use cases.
Guy, right.
Like, yeah, so like that's actually really interesting that it's integrated
kinda
cool, in there.
Right?
Yeah,
it protects the screen, and it's quite nice. The stylus is, for me, it's still kind of gimmicky. There are very few times I actually used the stylus, but it's nice that it's there. I let my dad play with this for a week, and he was using the stylus all the time because the last smartphone he had was a Treo. So that's what he remembers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I'm looking at something like this, I'm wondering, you know, we're seeing size inflation. Even Apple, which doesn't react to the market, they're making their screen bigger and everyone's touting it as the, you know, this is the greatest thing ever.
Right.
So are these just going to get larger and larger and larger? I mean, people thought the Note 1 was big.
Well, the thing is, we talked about this before on the show, but what's the difference between that at 5 inches and my Nexus 7 at 7 inches? I mean, like, I mean, hold them next to each other, like, it can only go to 6 inches or so. You know what I mean? Like, it can only go that much bigger at some point before they add a phone to this, and I'm walking around going like that, you know?
And people used to think, oh, this is ridiculous. I'm walking around with this.
That's not that ridiculous.
This is not that ridiculous anymore.
Yeah.
People get used to it, I guess.
Yeah. What's funny is that, like, our whole society has gone so, like, micro, smaller, smaller, but now we're having, like, a reaction. We're going bigger, bigger. So,
Because, wait a minute, it's more usable if it's a little bit bigger. Well, I've been spending some time with it's kind of not in the same category as the Galaxy Note 2. It's the LG Spectrum 2, and it's totally, it's a 4.7-inch screen, so I guess it's really marginally smaller, but actually
when we can say a 4.7-inch screen is small, you know that the paradigm
is
small
in this conversation.
Look at that. That's crazy. And I want to compare it to the Nexus, too.
There we go. This is the LG Spectrum.
And, you know, just for fun, get an iPhone out here, and you can fit it in the pocket.
No, iPhones, somebody hands me their iPhone, and I'm like, this is like a toy. I'm like, how do you use this? Right. It's so small.
But the LG Spectrum 2, it's $100 on Verizon with a 2-year contract. And, you know, so it's kind of solidly in that mid-range phone category. And as far as, you know, operating in that category, it's awesome. It actually really impressed me. I think the things that didn't impress me so much about it is just kind of the hard edges around it can be kind of uncomfortable if you catch it at the wrong place. And
the back of it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. It's got kind of a little bit of a soft touch back there. Some think it's nice, some think it's a little cheap feeling, but you know, it doesn't get all glossy and smudgy.
I was trying to play. I've been catching up on Gossip Girl this season. I was trying to play Spot the Android Phone because they're sponsored by Verizon or whoever it is. Oh, I think one of the characters had this phone.
Okay,
yeah, because I recognize the tops, the edges. And
yeah. What's interesting to me is it's very. I mean, the size of the device is actually pretty much the same as the Galaxy Nexus, but it actually feels bigger when you have it in your hand, just based on the fact that the edges are squared. Just based on that fact alone, I feel a big difference using this versus using this. This just feels a little bit more ergodynamic versus this one that I feel like I'm kind of reaching and everything like that. But otherwise, I mean, the processor's great. It's a 1.5 gigahertz dual core Snapdragon S4. So it's, you know, very fast and responsive, especially for a mid-range phone. Wasn't too fond of the camera, but otherwise, very stoked on this phone. So if $100 is what you have and Verizon is your carrier, I'm all for it. LG Spectrum 2.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I really love about the Android ecosystem, which is you can look at a mid-range phone and you can look at one of these higher range phones and you see what it's aimed for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a Note is not for everybody. But there are some people who will absolutely love the functionality you can get on this that you can't get on a mid-range phone or even another high-end phone. And I like that spectrum, to be able to put three phones right next to each other and say, yeah, they're all using the same operating system, but they serve different markets. Because as a technologist, that's exciting for me. One size does not fit all.
I totally got two words jumbled there, ergodynamic. That might be a new – that's definitely a new word. It's certainly not the word I was trying to say.
Is that a show title? I don't know, possibly.
Well, we'll put it up there in the possibilities. I don't even know how to spell that. That's how much it isn't a word. Anyways, okay, cool. Well, there we go.
Yeah, well, before we go to an email, one thing I totally spaced on when we're talking about Android 4.2, remember a couple weeks ago I was having some complaints or worries about the widgets on the lock screen and how would that work with security and would you be able to use it? After having for a week now, they got it right. They totally got it right.
Oh,
so because I'm someone, I use the lock, not just lock, but I use like the finger, like to connect the dots for security. And while I can see my messages and I can access the phone or go to Google Now, if I try to go to those apps or interact with it, it makes me unlock.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah. So like, so here, if I want to go to text, it brings up a overshadow. Yeah. You see that there. So that's the messages widget is behind there, and I've got to do my unlock, you know, pattern to do it. So
okay, and it kind of fuzzes it out.
Yeah, it kind of, yeah.
You can still read it a little bit.
Yeah, but I can't interact. Somebody can't interact with it. So
right.
Anyway, I just remembered that. So
cool.
Cool. So onto an email. Peter writes in and says, "Hey guys, I really like the show and listen almost every week. Thank you, Peter. We appreciate it. I'm looking for a recommendation for an Android tablet for my parents. They are older and never had a tablet or smartphone before and are now interested." Oh, how apropos of this conversation. Almost as if we planned it.
Never.
So they're interested. So I'm potentially looking at an Android tablet as a gift. I hope they don't watch the show. They would use it primarily for email. He specifies AOL email and web browsing. However, one factor in the choice from my perspective is that I will be remote technical support. They live about 3 hours away from me. I have a Galaxy Tab 10.1, so I'm thinking about a Galaxy Tab 2 10.1 for them. That way, hopefully, I can recreate most issues they have on my tablet. Also, there seems to be some fairly good prices now. However, I'm a little concerned that the Galaxy Tab 2 10.1 hardware is getting dated by this point. Does it make sense to buy at this point, or would it make sense to look for something newer? Thanks. Good question. I lean at the Nexus 10. I mean, I understand you wanting to be able to recreate their kind of scenario.
Yeah, but how
important to that is that? And,
really depends. Yeah, and it also really depends on just how familiar you are with the Android platform. If you're familiar enough to kind of walk yourself through it, I don't think the 10's going to be so detached that you'd have a hard time walking them through whatever trouble they get into on their tablet.
I understand the desire to want to be able to recreate any problem. I mean, that's the IT. Yeah. Goal. You got to be able to sort of recreate the problem so you can recreate an answer. But when you use a more popular product like the Nexus, then you also get the help of all the interwebs. If it's a much more popular product, there's probably many more people who have run into that particular problem and can give you a simple solution.
Exactly.
So, I think you may not be able to recreate exactly, but you can find out enough information from enough people to make it worth your while to go with the more popular products
plus,
now.
Mm-hmm. Plus also, and as someone who's done tech support for his mother over the phone or over email and stuff like that, the tech support nightmares you have with a desktop computer are way less than you'd have with a tablet. Yeah. A tablet is pretty in your face and kind of easy, you know? So I mean, I would say if you can get your hands on it, I would say the Nexus 10. That's what I've been recommending this holiday season.
Yeah, I mean, it really sounds like this is about the price range that you're looking at is the $400 to $500 price range for a tablet, which go your parents. They're stoked.
Awesome.
The Nexus 10 16 gig is only $399, probably less, probably about on par with what you were thinking. So I would agree. Go that way. All right, let's dive into apps. You go.
No. I am? Oh, yes, right. That's right. I planned it that way. Heard about the... reset.
I'm realizing I didn't have the conversation with you before the show, halfway through the show. Hey, would you like to present something? So this is totally my fault. My apologies.
Classic Jason. That's classic Jason. That's a good
one. I just assumed. I put your initials in there and forgot to tell you.
Don't you know that's how we do the show?
That's how we roll.
This is how I dictate.
So you know that there's been a problem for a while with the Facebook app on Android. It's kind of junk. I mean, even when you can get the functionality out of it that you want, which is not often, it's crashy, it's buggy.
Oh, so annoying.
Everyone's looking for a third party. So Facebook has figured out that the best way to get their developers to create better apps is to make them actually use Android devices. You know, if your Android developer is using an iPhone and only an iPhone, he or she's not going to really care at the end of the day because he's not affected by his or her work. So they've got a new campaign of Droid fooding. They've got these posters all over the Facebook campus that are essentially saying, look, if you're coding for Android, we'd like you to use an Android phone. Now, it's been reported that although they're not ready to give up their iPhones, there's many more people walking around with both devices, which I think is that's what you want, right?
That should be. I mean, honestly, I think this is the way to go. If you're developing, I question people who are designing and developing for a platform and not actively playing in it, you know, and not actively using it. I think this is a great management maneuver by them. We'll see if it works. I mean, a similar thing happened at Google.
Right.
I mean, remember when we started seeing the Nexus One? Friends of mine who worked at Google, they had this weird phone with a QR code on the back, and like Google made a game out of it with their employees, and they that got them to move over from iPhone. So
And I think it's an idea whose time has come at Facebook because they have had such a culture of isolation. Yeah. You know, it goes way back to Mark saying, well, the iPad's not a mobile device. That's why we're not designing an app for it. And it just kind of continues. Facebook would like everyone to use their applications and their mobile devices the way Facebook would like to use it. I think this is an acknowledgement of, no, we've got a code for the way people actually want to use their devices.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely. That's the only way you're going to know how to improve that app because that app needs a lot of improvement.
Needs a lot of love.
I mean, it speaks volumes that I have it on my phone. And I go to the web and use the web version.
Right.
I mean, that speaks volumes.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. Anyway, continuing with our theme of Google and things, different services of Google connecting to one another, there was a recent change in the Google Play Store, specifically around user reviews. You used to be able to leave a review of an app or something. You used to be able to leave it anonymously. No longer. Google has now connected the review system in the Google Play Store to your Google Plus account. So all reviews are going to have an identity next to them, and I think that's great.
Good. There's nothing negative that I can say about this. I think this is awesome.
There are people who are decrying this, saying, oh, well, you know, what about this is censorship or this is the restriction of free speech? I'm saying, no, it's not.
Because just don't leave a review.
Exactly. We've seen it time and time again where allowing that level of anonymity, especially on something like this, you're just inviting.
Here's my whole thing is that with in social media and in comments and in chat rooms and things like this, it's so easy to put in a dumb fake name and say whatever you want and hide behind the keyboard and hide behind that. When you put your name up against it and you put your identity up against it I take the approach of anything I say online or on these shows, anything like that, or on Twitter or on Facebook, I would say to the person I was talking to, I would say to you guys, anything I post, because you need to be accountable for what you say. And anybody who isn't who doesn't want that accountability, then you don't deserve you shouldn't be doing it then.
Right.
You know, you're trolling. Yeah. You know, so
it comes down to if you don't want to give me your actual name, if you don't want to attach something to it, so I know that you've invested in this comment, I don't want to read it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So good job, Google. I'm all about that.
That's agreed. Yeah. Very, very cool. All right. Let's jump into the arena.
Woohoo! Two enter, one lives. The Android Arena.
So can I get a rule clarification? We never talked. Now that Eileen is gone, have we just eliminated her arena wins, or do we spread them out amongst ourselves, or
distribute them?
They're negated. I don't know. She, a forfeit.
I think that they live in perpetuity at least until the end of the year.
She couldn't have left in March. She had to wait until the end of the year.
I think they at least last until the end of the year, and then we can compare the year's worth of wins.
Yeah.
And then, you know, next year starts a new year. Yep. If she comes on as a guest, she'll be counted in the guest category.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh.
Well, that's the thing. If she comes on a guest before the end of the year, would it count to her total? I guess it has to count to her total.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right,
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely would. All right. So last week, we had a few apps. Oregon Trail, Screen Standby, Snapchat. Wow, this changed actually last... When I checked this, I think it was yesterday.
Look at
Screen
that.
Standby
one vote.
Yeah.
Was well
You know,
ahead.
I haven't voted yet. Hold up.
By one vote.
By
Oregon
one
Trail.
Vote. Hmm.
And I get it. I see.
Wait a minute.
Nobody likes sexts. Okay.
Fine.
Whatevs.
Interesting discrepancy. Okay.
Just
well, then
keep my innovative apps to myself.
Yeah. Well, hey, it was close. It was close in
was
the
close.
Running.
No, I'm kidding.
Oregon Trail for first place apparently with 36% of the votes. Screen Standby second place with 30. Wait a minute. Oh, two more just came in.
Oh, it was Oregon Trail. Yes. No, it was Oregon Trail.
Oh.
Yeah, that's just a chat room. Yeah.
Chat room, cut it
They're
out.
They're messing with me.
You almost said
All right, we'll go with the original screenshot. Yeah, I don't know what to think about this one. Screen Standby.
The whole system's falling apart. It's all falling apart. Down is up, man. Up is down, black is white, left is right.
Keep the integrity
Dogs and cats
of going
living together.
Yes, exactly. All right, so we have three new apps for this week, starting with Ron.
All right. So I keep going back to the fact that Eileen is gone, but now that Eileen is gone, I feel as if someone needs to carry the flag of photography apps.
Okay, good.
And that's me this week. I don't know if it's going to be me every week, but that's me this week. You might remember, it had to have been within the past year, one of us, I think probably Eileen, did Pixlr-matic, which was Autodesk, who's most popularly known as from CAD. They came out with a photo app, which is kind of random, and it was really kind of cool looking. Well, I thought it was really interesting to see that they've released a new app, and I've got it here on my tablet. It works on both phone and tablet, and it's called Pixlr Express. And it is, yet again, another free app from Autodesk. It's free in the Google Play Store. And you basically what you can do with it is it's a great way to edit your photos. A lot of people love to take photos on their phones and their tablets, and all the filters and all the adjustments and things like that. And there are all these different ways to mess with your photos or change them. Pixlr Express is another really pretty app from Autodesk. Like, I wonder, what is Autodesk doing? Is there three dudes who are really into Android at Autodesk and are like, oh, let us make apps. I'm like, yeah, just do whatever you want. So check it out. I mean, this is really cool. So I got to hear my tablet. So we're going to listen to some music as I do it now. Launching it, you could just see. Oh, wait. Oh, crap. You could just see from the get-go, it's not taking any of the Android OS suggestions. It's not using any of the Jelly Bean kind of menu items or display or anything like that. It's got its totally own look and feel to it. But it's really pretty. It's really nice. So when you open it up, you can either take a photo or you can choose a photo from your library. In this particular case, because I don't have the front-facing camera on the Nexus 7, I'm going to choose a photo from my library. But it would just, if you have it on your phone with a better camera, you could take a picture from the app. So I'm going to choose a photo. It pulls up your gallery and just shows you all the random, photos on your SD card. I'm going to go through and I'm going to pick a photo here, and I'll take this picture of Disney World that I took this summer on vacation. And so here's the photo. And what you've got is you've got a really easy-to-use UI. Up here, you can just close the photo or you can save it. Down here are your actions, and you can make adjustments. You can apply an effect. You can put an overlay on, or you can add a border. So I'm going to go through them all. Just under the adjustments, it kind of spills out in these tiles, and you can add a color splash. You can sharpen. You can denoise. You can do red eye removal. You can change the color, change the contrast, add blur, rotate, crop, all the kind of photo editing tools that you might want to do. In this particular case, I'm going to let's say adjust the color. And once you choose one, it gives you the different settings for each one. And so here I'm going to choose hue, and it gives me a slider, and so I can change the hue of the photo. You know, I can change the lightness here, add some saturation, or take away some saturation, and hit apply. Pretty cool. I can add in some blur, and so you can blur the entire photo if you want, and it'll work and do it. Real advanced photo manipulation stuff. Under effects, everybody loves the effects. They've got a whole bunch of different categories of effects. So here they've got vintage, creative, default, soft, subtle, too old, unicolor. So we'll go vintage. And then within each effect, there are different filters within the effect, similar to Instagram and things like mm-hmm. that. So I can choose one. It can kind of give you kind of auto settings, you know. So once I find one I like, I'll choose it and just hit apply, and it applies it. Then you can add an overlay, and there's a whole bunch of different overlays you can add. You can add, you know, kind of little vignette, you know, kind of shadow around it. You can add that kind of retro poster one, which I really like, where you can add this beam, and it kind of puts out those lines around it. So really cool little editing. You can do a gritty version of that. Really neat little filters you can put in. So I'm going to apply that. And then you can change and add a border. So I'm going to add a grunge border because Lord knows we all love our grunge borders. And there are different ones you can choose from. And you can even set as a favorite, which I think is a neat little way.
Set a particular setting to a favorite?
Exactly, oh, okay. Yeah. So there's a frame you often use. You just save it as your favorite. And then once it's done, you close that. There's the final photo. And up here, it keeps track of what you're doing, and you can undo and redo stuff. So let's say, I want to change that frame, and I want to get rid of that effect. Oh, no, I want to bring back the effect. I can take it away, you know. And then once it's done and ready, you can hit save, and you can either save it to the gallery or you can share it. And once you hit share, it ties into – you choose the size of the photo you want to do. I'll do a medium one, depending on the size, you know, the K size of the photo. And then it just pulls into the Android share functionality, and you can choose what app you want to share it to. You know, whether I want to post it to Facebook or Google Plus or Twitter or whatnot. So a really, really interesting photo app, again, from Autodesk. Very similar to Pixlr-Matic. This is almost like the next generation of Pixlr-Matic. Pixlr Express, a little more powerful, but it's totally free. And if you're somebody who likes to mess with photos and, you know, do a little photo editing, it's pretty neat.
Nice.
You know?
Yeah.
Pretty beautiful, too. So,
yeah, some of that imagery just... made it pop.
I'm a bad photographer, so anything I can do to make my pictures look better, I'm all about. So
nice.
Yeah,
so. Nice.
Cool. Yeah, and a lot of really good reviews.
It's just quality. It's just a high quality app. I mean, I would love to talk to someone at Autodesk to be like, them doing CAD makes sense, and they do Sketchbook and stuff like that.
Sketchbook is great,
but these apps make no sense.
Is that a free app?
It's free. It's totally free.
Nice.
So cool.
Excellent. That is Pixlr Express, Pixlr Express.
Yep.
Awesome. Good pick. What you got?
All right. So
you're prepared for it this time because knew that this is coming up. I actually told you
this was coming up. Now, last time I was on All About Android, I had an app that had a little bit of fraudulent voting. We're not going to do that this time, right? Right, Chat Realm? Okay, we're going to be totally honest. But I want to show off an app that this is not new. This has been around pretty much since the start of the Android ecosystem, but surprisingly, a lot of people don't have this on their phones, and I'm blown away. It's called Wi-Fi Analyzer, and if Chad shows you the screen here, you can see what it does. It uses the internal radio of your Android device, and it shows you what the 2.4 and 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi spectrum looks like. The reason why this is important is because if you've ever been in a crowded space and you're trying to figure out why your Wi-Fi is not working, or if you're trying to make Wi-Fi work at home and you can't figure out why you're always getting interference, this actually lets you see what's sitting on top of your bands. Now, this is the 2.4 gigahertz range, which means there's really only three channels, and it gives you a visual representation. There's channel 1, channel 6, and channel 11. And those curves above them show you, pretty much
where all the RF energy is going within that band. As you can see, that two-wire one, that purplish one, it's straddling bands because someone thought they'd be cute and make it channel 3. What that does is it actually messes up channel 1 and channel 6. So, you know, this is one of those things where it actually gives you a visual representation of something you can't see. Something else I think you should is interesting is if you switch this over to the 5 gigahertz range, you understand why people are always saying you should go with 802.11a or N that uses the 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi. Because all this space is empty. This range is almost always empty. And that means that if you're operating in 5 gigahertz, your signal is going to work much better. You're going to have a lot less congestion. You're going to get better throughput. Now, that's not all. It lets you do a couple of other modes. This one's one of my favorites. I designed a aluminum reflector that I could set my phone in, and it acts like a signal detector. So I could choose a particular signal. I can tap and then figure out like which of these I'm trying to find. Let's say there's a rogue AP somewhere, and I want to find out where this guest one is. And as I rotate the phone, it won't do it so much right now because I don't have the reflector, but that signal meter would go up and down. So it's like direction finding to look for a rogue access point. Very, very cool. The application also lets you see all the different access points that are running in your area. It's one of these applications that since it's free, you should have it on your phone just to be able to diagnose what's going on with your Wi-Fi. If it looks like this, it means, the wireless is really congested, and that explains what's going on. So this is Wi-Fi Analyzer, free, and if you don't have it on your phone, you really should.
That's super cool to kind of get the visual representation. I had never heard of this this app. A few people in the chat room are like, this is an old school app,
but
it's a great app.
It does it well, right?
Yeah, it does it really well. I just had never heard about it. In a place like the Twit Studio, it's actually very interesting to see it because we have a lot of wireless stuff going on here, so you actually get more than just a single thing appearing.
If you ever wonder why like the guest network here at Twit is always falling down, it's because there's so many access points in this area, and they're all competing for that same space.
It's a perfect storm,
right.
Awesome. Well, that is, what is it? It's Wi-Fi Analyzer, this time with a Z instead of an S. If you remember a few weeks back, Analyzer.
The correct way.
The correct way.
I kid.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and show you my app. And this actually came in really, I wish I was reviewing this app last week because it came in really handy for me over the weekend. And I don't know how I'd never heard of it before because it's really... It's got a good, nice design to it, and it's actually very helpful. In the past, we've talked about, what was the server? It was AppWatch. That was a web service that one of our fans created, and then later somebody went in and created an Android app around it, right? And basically the thought on here was you want to track an app, but you don't want to install it on your phone, so you do a search through AppWatch. It'll add it to your list, and then anytime that app has an update or goes on sale, you'll get notified on your phone. Well, if you don't want to place specific apps onto a list and you just want to have a general idea of when apps go on sale, use AppSale. That's the app that I'm reviewing. So I'll go ahead and launch it here. And we'll go right up there. It's refreshing the sales. So basically what this does is you can set parameters. I'll go into settings and I'll say, my filter is what is the minimum discount that I want before it actually appears for me. And also I can set kind of the popularity level of the particular app. Right now I have it set for minimum downloads of 1,000. So only apps that have 1,000 or more downloads will actually appear in my selection here. You can narrow it down to a number of categories. If I went into apps, I could narrow it down to a number of things that I'm interested in. Right now I have it set fully. I can change notifications to different intervals, and this works really well. Every day I get, I just set it to 12, but I had it set to 4, but every day I would get 1 to 2 notifications that would say these 2 apps just went on sale and are actually on sale at a discounted price. So it was really handy, and it totally triggered me to check it throughout the day, which is kind of what you're looking for when it's an app like this that's all about app discovery. You want it to kind of tickle that kind of, that kind of idea that, I want to check for something new because I'm excited to see what is on sale. It does it really well. So I'll go ahead and show you right here. The design of it is pretty good. I mean, it's you know, it has some of the touchstones of the Holo kind of design aesthetic, but it's not fully Holo, I wouldn't say. But it's pretty easy to use. It's kind of hard because it's on, I guess it's forced on landscape right now. So you don't.
This is the MHN.
Okay. Yeah. If I could swap that, I would. But anyways, I normally use it in portrait. But what you can see here is, for example, today, Seton Companion Media Center is now on sale, 40% off. Down from $499 to $299. I can click through and it'll give me, you know, all the information from the Play Store, some extras, kind of a chart showing you what price it's been at, where it's at now. And if you actually want to add it to some sort of a watch list, there's a little button right here that'll add it to a watch list. So even if it isn't included or you want to keep track of it, you can hit that. And now I'm watching it in my watch list. And if it comes up, you know, I can see that for sure later. If I actually wanted it, I could just click the get it for, and that'll take you actually through to the Play Store where you can purchase it. And you can see right there, $2.99 for that app. I'm kicking myself because I didn't jump on this, but I was busy at the time that I saw it, and I just didn't make the clicks down here. Where was it? This. Groove IP was down to $249 from $499, 50% discount. This is an app that I keep meaning to get, and it's already expired, so I can't get it now for that discounted price. $5 really isn't a lot anyways, but anyways, I could have got half off, and had I just jumped on it, I would have. But ultimately, app sales is just a really easy way to keep track of sales on apps that might cost, you know, more than you're willing to spend. I think right now, if I scroll up, Beyond Pod is discounted from $6.99 to $1.99. Google Play, the Play Store, might surface some of these, but some of these, a lot of these, and particularly over the weekend, over the Black Friday weekend and Cyber Monday, there were a lot of unadvertised sudden sales, apps that just went on sale for 24 hours and knocked half to two-thirds of the price off. And if you knew about it, you would have jumped on it, but chances are you weren't searching at that time, so you didn't know about it. This is a great way to track those sales. It's called App Sales, and it's a great app. I'm definitely keeping it installed and monitoring it regularly.
This reminds me of that story I heard a while back about a guy who wrote a demon that would look for cheap items on eBay and would send him one once a month. And he had a set of parameters for, like, it's got to be less than a dollar and it's got to be free shipping. That's kind of like I see you using it as that. It's like a persistent presence of, get me something interesting when the price becomes right.
Exactly. Like, I'm not going.
Random.
I spend a lot of money on apps, actually, for this show particularly, because we, you know, we kind of have to.
It's an
important part of the show. It's built into it. I also like to support developers, you know, so I dropped $15 on the Chameleon launcher. Like, I'm okay with dropping dollars on apps. Sometimes, though, an app isn't in its own right and at that price compelling enough for me to drop the money on it. Groove IP, for example, has a very specific use case that I'm not necessarily in all the time. So right now, at this particular moment, I don't know if I'm willing to spend $5 on it. If I were in a situation where I needed to use that at that particular moment, it suddenly becomes much more valuable to me, and I would drop $5 on it. If it was discounted to $250, I might be more inclined to be like, you know what?
I might need this.
Whatever. It's worth it for $250. I'm sure I'm going to get that kind of usage out of it eventually. And this is just a way to monitor for that.
Now, I want to point out that your app is the only one that costs money of any of the apps in the arena. But
it's free. The app is free.
The app is free, but you pay for the apps.
The app is definitely free.
Jason found a loophole.
A loophole. I don't know. I wouldn't call this a loophole. I just call it awesome. So there you go. App sales.
And it saves money.
We all like a sale, right? So this is just a way to monitor for it. All right. So there you have it. Three apps this week. Pixlr Express, Wi-Fi Analyzer, and App Sales. Why don't you vote and let us know which is your favorite app this week. Go to AAApoll.com/87, AAApoll.com/87, and let us know which of these three apps is your favorite. Which one will you be installing? And
I'm going to make my guess that the initial returns from the chat room will be Wi-Fi Analyzer.
But it's already up.
The long game will be Pixel Express. That's my guess.
Well, because right now we're getting all the guys in the chat room.
Exactly.
And if they're in the chat room, they've got that geeky, hardcore element.
Mm-hmm. We've seen that. The more casual viewer, the person who watches it Sunday night, you know, just takes it easy. They'll surprise
pretty
you.
Pictures. Yeah,
they'll surprise
you. I don't know. Wi-Fi is pretty far ahead now. 58%, 60% is dominating. There's no question about
now,
it. Right
last now. Time I was on, we had a total of like 1,000 votes, which we never get, which was weird.
I was like, oh, wow, we either got really popular.
Resonated.
And did you get an email from the straw poll people saying, yeah, we want to know how that happened?
Because yes. It was in Google Plus. Awesome. It was a comment. It was like, yeah, we think that's weird too. So they were kind of looking. It was Go Poll Go.
That's right.
It's not Straw Poll. All right. Awesome. Well, that is it for this week's episode of All About Android. Father Robert Ballester, thank you once again for joining us. Always awesome to have you on
the show. Thanks for having me on. It's always great to hang out in the Brick House. Are you kidding me? This is Disneyland.
It is kind of a Disneyland.
And not the kind of Disneyland that Ron would put all the rays on.
I got some good photos. It's hard to pick one of these. There's also a photo on here of my family at the – where was it? At the MGM Mountain? Studio. Oh. No, like the MGM Studios, the fake lot. And there was a San Francisco spot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so it was.
You could have broadcasted from there.
I know, I should have. Thought you were back here. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, go on.
What would you like to promote?
You know, I really would like people to check out Twite. It's a show here on the Twit Network. We film every Monday. I've got this TD, this technical director, who is just fabulous, fantastic. He knows his stuff.
I hate that guy.
Heck, I know. But, you know, we talk about enterprise tech, but it's not to the level that if you don't work in IT that you won't understand anything or you won't like it. We really try to bring the knowledge to everyone. You know, if you've ever wondered about how networks are connected, if you've ever wondered about how the internet works, if you've ever wondered about how simple network technologies redefine our lives, why not give it a try? Come by Monday, noon Pacific, jump in the chat room and you'll be able to talk to everyone who is geeky and trolly all at the same time.
Excellent. Yes, I will attest to the fact that when I started this whole podcast craziness at ZDNet and in CNET, the podcasts there that were more enterprise level bored me to tears. Twyatt does not. Twyatt actually, so much of the conversation, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Like your the big data conversation from a couple episodes ago scared the pants off me.
And that's what we do in Twyatt. Scare the pants off of you.
Yeah, you know, I was sitting at the TD desk, so nobody knew.
Your pants were scared off.
Yes, that's right, they went away. Ron.
I'm not wearing pants right now.
Well, you never do. No. So.
Well, so here's that photo I was talking about. Here's what Disney thinks San Francisco looks like. You want to zoom in there? It was kind of freaky.
If San Francisco was created out of Legos.
To turn the but to turn the corner, though, and see those signs. Those were scarily accurate.
That's not too bad.
The fake background with the Golden Gate and Coit Tower all in the same shot, that was a little more...
That doesn't work.
I don't know if that actually is possible.
Yeah. No, it's not. Yeah. Absolutely not.
So that's Disney's representation of San Francisco. But anyway, find all my crap at about.me/RonXO. You can go find my Twitter and my Google Plus and Facebook and all fun stuff like that. And go to ifanboy.com if you like comic books. So
And go to Chad if you like...
Minecraft.
I almost said Warcraft.
That conversation about your show would have been totally different if it was about Warcraft 3. That's all I'm saying.
And, well, it would have been you. So one day after the show, we had a conversation about Minecraft. It would have been you explaining Warcraft to me because I never played it.
Oh, Warcraft 3 was great, man. Yeah. You would have loved it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Where can people find your stuff, Chad?
I do a show that records live here on the Twit Network at 7 p.m. on Thursdays called OMG Craft, and you can go to omgcraft.com or .net to check that stuff out. This week, we are going to cover all the stuff that happened at Minecon.
Excellent. And you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Jason Howell or about.me/Jason Howell. Quick thank you to the chat room and all the people that watched the show and emailed to us. You guys are awesome. Yep. And really always appreciate your feedback and your input and your participation. So thank you for being awesome. Why don't you be more awesome and send us an email if you haven't already, AAA at twit.tv. You can send us a link to a video in that email, and we'll play the video on the show. We don't get many of those, so you'd stand out. Voicemail 347-SHOW-AAA. Leave us a voicemail. Find the show on Twitter. We are at Android Show. You can find the show on the site as well as a wiki. There's a wiki there on our show page at twit.tv/AAA. You can also find our episodes there. iTunes, YouTube, all over the interwebs. And finally, you can catch us live every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific, usually, at live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android.
Bye-bye.
Bye.